Ah, this is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening, live in Los Angeles, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. The Herd brought to you by Firestone Complete Auto Care. Keep your car running newer, longer. Joy Taylor is joining me on a Thursday. I don't know if we can top yesterday's hijinks. It's crazy.
It's a lot that went on yesterday. We introduced a new pair of shoes to the world.
Ving Rhames, David Spade. It was a wild day yesterday. But you know, it's funny. It used to be, it feels like to me, that you used to have things you could do and things you couldn't do, and we all agreed on them, right? Like, do this, that's good. Do that, that's trouble. But social media now, it's not cool if you go to Twitter or Facebook to have standards, to have rules, to have laws. You gotta just... Everybody's free to do what they want, man. Everybody can be a Kardashian. Kardashians are just individual branders and owners of a business. They don't have to answer to anybody other than the Kardashians. But there are certain jobs, you know, like high school principal, CEO, franchise quarterback, where you have to actually answer to people. You have teammates. You're the face of a business. And the business isn't about, you know, being cool on Instagram. It's about memorizing a playbook, making sure everybody's following you. You know, advertisers, ticket holders, you're part of a big conglomeration of stuff. It's great the Kardashians can do anything they want, but that's not the way, you know, sports is. They call it a family, but you're not, you know, biologically connected like the Kardashians. So Jimmy Garoppolo goes out with a porn star to a place that's got paparazzi swimming around it in Beverly Hills. Everybody's like, oh, big deal. It's just, what's wrong with a porn star? And to that I say, really? All you dads listening, if I say your daughter ends up in porn, you cool with that? Just drops out of college. Oh, you're not. Hey, all you guys watching, your girlfriend that you really starting to love gets into porn. You okay with that? Oh, why not? Just another industry. By the way, if I right now put porn on my Twitter, the internet would implode. I'm not even hanging out with it. I just make a mistake and it ends up. I could put a mistaken picture of Joy, John, my dog, my kids, my family, a cuss word. Nobody cares. Put porn on my Twitter, accidentally, the internet implodes. Why would that be? It's just porn. But on the internet, social media, grandpa, certain things in life don't go together. Toothpaste and orange juice. Franchise quarterback and porn stars. They just don't go great together. Jimmy Garoppolo yesterday stood up, owned it, and apologized.
Life is different now. My life off the field, I've never really been big on, you know, being very public with things, you know, even social media. I'm not out there a ton, but, you know, my life's looked at differently. And I'm under a microscope, and it's like Kyle said, it is a good learning experience. Just have to take it in stride. I mean, it is what it is.
Did you notice what he said there? My life is different now. That's what he said. He didn't say, I'm different. He goes, my life is different. What's changed in his life? He's not a backup. He's a franchise quarterback. My life has changed. It's not like he changed the color of his hair. No. Now he gets $140 million. Backup, third string, right guard, left corner, strong safety, whip linebacker, special teams coach. No, nobody cares. Franchise quarterback. Hanging out with porn star. Can't do it. By the way, quarterback's always been the judgment position. Right now, Jameis Winston. Last 3 years, Jameis Winston's gotten better each year. But why are a lot of people out on Jameis Winston? His judgment is really bad. OBJ was on the open market. No takers. Giants don't appear to be in any hurry to extend his contract. Why? His judgment. Le'Veon Bell wants more money. Todd Gurley got his. Why isn't Le'Veon Bell getting his money? Not because he's not great. His judgment. And for quarterback, it's even a bigger judgment position. And let's be honest. Jimmy Garoppolo just called the wrong audible here. Beverly Hills, Thursday, Friday night, paparazzi everywhere, porn star. He called the wrong audible. He threw a pick six. By the way, the personnel choice was interesting. The receiver he threw to, the tight end, was interesting. But he called the wrong audible, and it was intercepted, and it was a pick six. And that's what quarterback is. It is a judgment position. Don't believe social media. There are standards for those who have the corner office. There are standards for those who are seen as people leading other people. He made a mistake. And on Twitter, I know it's cool, but ask yourself. If your wife walked in right now and on your computer you had recipes, would she be upset? If you had pictures of the family, would you be upset? If you were checking out porn, how would your wife act? Oh, it would be a little different, wouldn't it? Dad. Of course it would. There are standards. Don't listen to the internet. Things matter. Judgment matters. Jimmy called the wrong audible. All right, let me shift gears to Kevin Durant. I love this free agency stuff. All these big stars talking. Kevin Durant likes media and podcasting and has his own and goes on other people's podcasts. He was going on a podcast. He started talking about LeBron James going to the Los Angeles Lakers, and here's what Kevin Durant had to say.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was a perfect decision, perfect move, did everything he's supposed to do in Cleveland. I think this is a perfect next step for him. And he's kind of breaking down the barriers of what an NBA superstar is supposed to be. You know, you feel like you're supposed to just, you know, play it out in one spot. I think he did a good job of giving you different chapters, and it's going to make his book even more interesting when it's done.
Of course Kevin Durant liked what LeBron did, because Kevin Durant is like about half of America. He's incredibly comfortable with change. Kevin Durant went to three different high schools, starred in all of them. He went to four places in 3.5 years. He grew up in D.C., went to college in Texas, drafted by Seattle, and they immediately moved to Oklahoma City. His high school graduation to his second year in the NBA, four places, thrived in all of them. Do you know the average American lives 18 miles from their mom? 40% of Americans never leave their area code. Everybody listening to me has somebody in their family still lives where they grew up. And then there's that one kid in the family that wanted to try new stuff, challenges, mobility. That's Kevin Durant. This is why I say the Warriors dynasty is much closer to the end than it is to the beginning or the middle. It's really close to the end. I think they'll be in the finals next year. I've taken the Celtics to beat them. That will create frays and fatigue, and it will break up. And my guess is Kevin Durant moves on. Because there's really four people that have changed the NBA. And I've been watching it since the 70s. The Big Four, Magic and Bird saved the league. Michael Jordan made it global. And LeBron has made it mobile. So Kevin Durant, who's incredibly comfortable with change, has grown up in the era where we're increasingly very comfortable with stars changing. And everybody freaks out about the Warriors and the dynasty, which has proven to be very good for ratings. But this is why I keep saying, oh no, this dynasty, they never last as long as we think. And you see little signs and little signals. And Kevin Durant's going to have, after next year, potentially three titles in 3 years and three finals MVPs. And then Steph Curry's probably going to say, yeah, we got all the rings and we got all the cash. Maybe I'd like to win an MVP. And it's going to happen sooner than later. That's why they bring on Boogie Cousins, because they have to add toughness, because they're getting rich and they're getting into social media and they're becoming big stars. And they were already sort of the skinny jeans dynasty to begin with. But last year, they looked against Houston really, really soft. But there's a reason millennials rent. I've got millennials in my family. Do you know why they rent? So they can find a better option. They don't want to own. They want to rent. And Kevin Durant's a millennial. And LeBron's a millennial. And they rent. They don't buy. Of course, Kevin Durant loved LeBron moving to Los Angeles. The kid that's comfortable with mobility in an era that is now safe and celebrated to be mobile. Good for Kevin. Always going to defend him. He's not going to be in Oakland very much longer. For the record, 16 of 26 NBA All-Stars. 16 of 26 just 2 years ago. are now on different teams, and it's not ending. I think Durant will end up, not that distant future, moving on after perhaps another title. I love Perky Jerky. What makes it so great are all the unique flavors. They have a new variety pack, Home Run. A lot of options. Listen, life gets boring fast. Try a different flavor. Every game, special offer, 40% off all multi-packs. The best tasting jerky on earth, guaranteed. Bill Belichick texted Jimmy Garoppolo, new Niner quarterback, former Patriot quarterback, Joy, after every win with the Niners. Listen to this. Jenny Ferenta, a very good reporter, did a profile on Garoppolo. After each of Garoppolo's starts for the Niners, he received a text from the coach who traded him. Bill Belichick, congratulating him on another win. Said Garoppolo's mother, Denise, Bill really, really liked Jimmy. They both knew it was there.
So hard to say goodbye.
Now, what does this tell you? Okay. Bill Belichick was forced to trade Jimmy Garoppolo. That's been reported multiple times. The Boston Herald confirmed again this week that it has created a rift between Tom and Belichick. Belichick did not want to get rid of Jimmy Garoppolo. And I was sitting there this morning thinking, this is the Romeo and Juliet, a love story ripped apart. Think about this. Bill Walsh got the Joe Montana success. He never got Steve Young. Chuck Knoll got the Bradshaw success, but he never got to coach Big Ben. Tom Landry got Staubach, but never got the gifted Troy Aikman. Mike Holmgren got Favre, long gone by the time Aaron Rodgers arrived. Tony Dungy got Peyton Manning, not around for Andrew Luck. But Bill Belichick was different. He had built an empire, Tom Brady, and he drafted Jimmy Garoppolo. And the longest dynasty ever in NFL history was the 49ers. And here was Bill, ready to not only surpass it, but blow it away. Another 7 to 8 years of dominating AFC football. Belichick had drafted Garoppolo, groomed Garoppolo, played him, taught him with those gentle, loving hands. And the feuding New England family ripped apart the love story. Alex Guerrero, of course, the apothecary. This is the NFL's Romeo and Juliet, a tragic love story where feuding families ripped apart two people meant for each other. Wherefore art thou, Garoppolo? Look at Jimmy G now, dating porn stars, totally unraveled, lost at sea, can't find love, seeking the depth and the loving, patient hands of Bill Belichick. Look at him unraveling. Confirmed by Garoppolo's mother, they knew it was there. Incredibly sad. Don't you think it's incredibly sad, a love story pulled apart?
I mean, Bill wants that old thing back.
That would, listen, if you're in love with somebody and, you know, the company, the parents stepped in, has ever happened to you?
No.
Yeah.
You?
Not really. I didn't listen to my parents. I was not the easiest kid. But the story's out is that Belichick texted, Boston Herald reporting 2 days ago, this was Belichick's guy. He was ready to sit Brady, trade Brady, move off Brady. And to this day, think about what Belichick has to live with now every day, this point forward. He was going to surpass the Niners, not only surpass it, but blow it away. Is all these great coaches get the one quarterback, they don't get the second. And it's so rare that you get a second, that you go from Peyton to Luck, that you go from, you know, you get Staubach, and then all of a sudden, not long after, here's Aikman, and you get Bradshaw, and here's Big Ben. We had another 10 years of Belichick dominating football. He's going to retire in a year. It's a bummer.
What's up, everybody? This is John Middlecoff from the 3-and-Out podcast on Colin Cowherd's podcast network. You can find me wherever you listen to podcasts. If you like Colin's show, you will like mine. I talk a ton of football. This week, I discuss why the Falcons should trade Julio, why Todd Gurley has no effect on Aaron Donald, and why the Raiders had another disastrous week. Again, my podcast is 3-and-Out on the Colin Cowherd Podcast Network.
I got to fill 3 hours a day, and stuff happens. I've always said, I don't know why sports fans feel that I have to have the same opinion when information changes. If you stepped on a plane and the pilot said, new radar, we're going to have to swing about 12 miles left to avoid thunderstorms, you'd be like, good, I don't want to go through a lightning storm on a plane. It's new information. If your daughter or your son got really sick and there was new medicine that could help them, you'd tell the doctor, we'd like the new medicine or the new therapy. If your stockbroker came to you and said, listen, we have some insiders that are selling the stock on this company. We have new information that came down today. You'd say, well, then sell the stock. But in sports, people want me to have an opinion and a bunch of stuff changes. How's your opinion change? Well, the team can lose a coordinator that I love, a quarterback, a left tackle, injuries. Why do I have to be beholden to sports opinions when all the information changes? A couple of years ago, I was really on the Raiders. They were winning games with Derek Carr, and they were seemingly winning them on a last drive. And I really do like Derek Carr a lot. I really, really do. This was me a couple of years ago on the Raiders, and they were red hot, won another game on the last play, had all these dynamic players and dynamic games, and they finished games with confidence. Here I was. I may be a little high on the Raiders, but man, yesterday, they are magic, man. They have stars. I know New England's got the culture, but at some point, New England is not explosive enough. They are the best TV product in the league. Whether they're the best team, as far as a television product, they are so much fun to watch. LA is going to end up with the Rams and the Chargers. That's the fun team to watch. How do we end up with the Rams? Well, the Rams have changed too. Got a new coach and a new format.
But, where Colin was wrong.
Yeah, but over the last year or two, there's just a bunch of stuff I don't like. I see this story: Khalil Mack won't report to camp, and according to Adam Schefter, John Gruden and Khalil Mack have not spoken once. Are you kidding me? That's got to be your first or second call. You call Derek Carr, I love you. You call Khalil Mack, I love you. So here's the thing. I love Gruden. I know Gruden. I really like him. But he was a TV star for 10 years, 15 years. Well, 10. Okay, he was a coach, then he was a TV star for a decade. A TV star is isolated. You don't have to do any lifting. You have an agent to do your negotiations, and one or two producers do all the headaches for you. It's an isolated, well-compensated position. It's not a leadership position. You're not building a team. What you do is you're building your own brand. My position's very isolated. I have a morning meeting, but by and large, it's not a leadership position. TV star is not a leadership position. It can be an isolated position. I have an agent that deals with my bosses. You know, I've got producers who deal with a lot of the stuff you see on television that I don't have to deal with. Okay, it's isolated. So he goes from that to now a new generation of players. And it's always felt like to me with Gruden, this was a nostalgia hire. It was a rear view mirror hire. And the more I read, the more I don't like. And I hate to say this, but I think John Gruden is great at selling John Gruden. And God, that's why he's a television star. That's why Trump was a reality star. Trump's good at selling Trump. I mean, he got elected president. Some people are great at selling themselves more than any product, more than any system. And John's great at it. He's really, really nimble and great at it. But remember, he took Tony Dungy's roster and momentum and won a Super Bowl. That's unfair, Colin. Well, we criticize Barry Switzer for doing the same in Dallas with Jimmy Johnson's personnel and momentum. So Gruden wins a Super Bowl. You do realize the 6 years after that in Tampa, he was under 500. Three of the 6 years were losing years. Two of his winning years were just 9-7. And he had alienated all sorts of people in Tampa. Okay? And I think we've elevated John to a level that, is he an elite coach? I mean, Barry Switzer, we crushed. Barry Switzer won multiple college national championships, built an absolute dynasty, goes to the NFL, takes Jimmy Johnson's personnel moves and momentum and wins the Super Bowl. We're like, Switzer's a hack. John Gruden didn't win national championships in college, didn't build an empire in Oklahoma, takes Tony Dungy's guys, his momentum, faces a Raider team in the Super Bowl that he knows the playbook and all the players and wins. And after that, it was kind of a bunch of meh. Wasn't like he was in a great division. His record was like 8 games under 500, 3 of 6 losing seasons. And here's the other thing. And I like John, but the more I read on this stuff, what made John Gruden great that he came into the league young and fresh and hungry and energized and seeking stuff. But he re-enters the league now as rich, removed, famous, and it's different. It's just different. Who are the two coaches in the NFL right now everybody loves? The two young coaches everybody loves. Sean McVay and the Rams. Everybody loves Sean McVay. Should, good coach. And Kyle Shanahan with the Niners. Those are the two young coaches. Everybody's like, you know, those guys are good. And it looks like they are good. What are they? They're defining who they are. They're seeking a legacy. They're energized. They're young. They're fresh. They're not on the top of the hill. They're not TV stars. They're not mega rich. They're not removed. They're not really that famous. I mean, Sean McVay, for being in Los Angeles, is about the seventh most famous coach. I mean, he's not as well known as Luke Walton or Doc Rivers. He's not as well known as Chip Kelly. I mean, seriously, he's about the fifth most popular coach with the NFL franchise. He's not Mike Socha with the Angels. So the more I read about this stuff in Oakland, that's why I picked them for last in the division. He hasn't talked to Khalil Mack once. That's weird to me. That is weird to me.
I mean, what rational explanation could there be that he hasn't even talked to him? One thing if it was like they don't have a lot of communication, but hasn't talked to him at all?
Well, John, television's an isolated business. And so he lived in an isolated world where he would go to that quarterback camp room in Tampa by himself every day and watch film. And he would fly by himself up to the Monday Night Football game, and he had an agent negotiating for him and a producer doing the headache stuff and doing all the prep, right? A lot of the prep. It's an isolated world. Now you got to get back out of that and get into, oh, I've got to know every employee's name. And I think it's hard. I think it's hard to be out of something for 10 years, step back into it. You can be funny, but if you've taken 10 years off of doing stand-up comedy, the first couple of shows are going to be really, really rough. It's going to take you a long time to get back in the groove.
Yeah, but it's not like he hasn't spoken to the punter.
It's Khalil Mack.
Yeah.
I mean, my first call would be Derek Carr, obviously. My second call is Khalil Mack. What are you doing? Let's have lunch. Let's talk. I don't know. And it does. I'm not a huge fan of rear-view mirror moves. I like the windshield. Look ahead, not behind. It has sort of a nostalgia feel to it. I don't even like that they gave him a 10-year contract. Like, I think you should make employees prove something. Joe Gibbs is a better all-time coach than Gruden, and Joe Gibbs was not great in the first 2 years. Looked a little off. This league, football's not baseball. It changes every couple years. We don't even have huddles now. No fullbacks now. I mean, positions, safeties don't matter like they used to.
Catch the Herd from noon to 3 Eastern on iHeartRadio and FS1.
A lot of times I'll say something and people react to it. And they're like, ah, Coward's crazy. He's unbelievable. I hate that guy. And in Carolina, they don't like me because I've always said with Cam Newton, I call him Roller Coaster Cam because every week you get, you know, a different quarterback. Great quarterbacks give you the same performance year after year after year. Matt Ryan had one pop year with Kyle Shanahan. The rest of his years looked very similar. Drew Brees' years look very similar. Brady's years, Aaron Rodgers' years. You know, Carson Wentz is going to go 8 years in a row now, and they're all going to look really, really good. Cam will go great stinker, half to half, quarter to quarter, game to game, series to series. He's all over the map. And that's just not, you know, you knew what you were getting. Brett Favre could lose and throw picks, but you knew what you were getting every week. You don't know what you're getting with Cam. Depends on the mood he's in. So 30 NFL execs came out this week. Scouts, GMs, 30 of them, and they rated quarterbacks in tiers, and they put Cam Newton in the second tier. They made him number 11. Okay, I've said Cam Newton's not a top 10 quarterback. I'm called a hater. Well, the NFL exec said he's not a top 10 quarterback. Are they haters? By the way, they've got Matt Ryan's better than Cam. He is. They say Russell Wilson's better than Cam. Oh, yeah, not close. He is. Matt Stafford's better than Cam. Slightly, in my opinion, but he is. Phillip Rivers better than Cam? No question. Carson Wentz better than Cam, they say? No question. Andrew Luck's better than Cam? No question. But if I say Andrew Luck's better than Cam, that is outrageous. Andrew Luck hasn't played for a year and a half, and executives think he's better than Cam. And there's a lot of unknown with Andrew Luck. It's not hate if it's accurate. If I say something and it's accurate, it's not hate. Saying Steph Curry's no good is haterade. Saying LeBron James is no good is haterade. Saying Cam Newton's not a top 10 quarterback is accurate. And by the way, they have Deshaun Watson, number 14, Jimmy Garoppolo, number 13, and Jared Goff, number 19. I predict all three will have huge years. And next year when they do this, because they do it every year, they'll be above Cam, who I think will be fine, but finish third in his division. So again, I've always said this. If what I say is accurate, it's not haterade. It's accurate. There's a difference. It's criticism.
The truth hurts, Colin.
Cam Newton's not a top 10 quarterback. By the way, Jeff Schwartz played in this league forever, has people inside the Carolina organization. He lives there, and he's the only guy in Carolina who's willing to come out and say, Cam makes a lot of excuses. He's not good enough. He was on our show earlier this week.
I don't think we're even critical. I just tell you how it is. He completes 58% of passes. He's wildly inconsistent. The thing I don't like about the media in Carolina and the fans is what they do is they blame everyone but Cam. It's over this year. McCaffrey, CJ Anderson, Samuel, Moore, Funchess, Greg Olson. You have all the weapons. There's no more excuses for Cam. No more.
By the way, their front seven is probably as good as any front seven in the league. So he's not going to have to score 40 points to win. That matters. When you have a great defense, you don't have to take the risks. So Carolina's got a great front seven. They're going to be in every game because of that defense. So Cam doesn't go into a game like Andrew Luck, I got to drop 36 to win. Cam scores 27, he'll go 11-5 with that defense. So you can go into a game without the burden or the pressure of having to deliver series after series after series. They got good running backs now. They got a great tight end now. Their offensive lineman's got two Pro Bowlers now. They've got one of the best offensive minds, Norv Turner, in the league. That's why yesterday I put him in my dumpster hierarchy. I always do the herd hierarchy. Yesterday I did the dumpster hierarchy. 10 teams I think could be dumpster fires. And I put Carolina in that group because if Cam Newton can't have a winning season with that front seven, and now he's got real pieces, that's on Cam because you're getting an elite offensive coordinator. You have a good enough offensive line. You have C.J. Anderson from Denver with McCaffrey. Olsen, you got real receivers. And by the way, you get to play Tampa twice, so that should be 2-0 because they don't even have a quarterback. So you can just put two wins down right now against Tampa. They're a mess. So, by the way, here's my herd dumpster hierarchy. It was Raiders, Bucks, Lions, Ravens, Panthers, Dolphins, Bears, Seahawks, Jags, Broncos. And people in Carolina, I didn't see it, but John, you told me that it was all over the internet yesterday. Coward calls us a dumpster fire. Yeah, if they cannot, if they don't average 26-28, they don't go 10-5 or 10-6 or 11-5, you got to really look now at the Cam. Is this the guy? Because Matt Ryan's not leaving anytime soon. Drew Brees have 2 or 3 years. How long can you babysit him? I think they have a chance to implode. I'm not saying they will. I still think the Raiders, the Bucks are by far and away the two teams in the NFL with the greatest opportunity to just be. You know, it's funny about Tampa Bay. I actually like Dirk Cutter, and I like their front office. How many excuses are we going to make for Jameis Winston? You know, you get to a point. Like watching Chicago this year with Mitch Trubisky. Like, I have real questions about Mitch Trubisky. Like, he never threw for two touchdowns. That's going to be, at some point, Chicago by Thanksgiving this year in Chicago, the coaching staff's not going to announce it, and the general manager's not going to announce it. But they're going to know by Thanksgiving if he's the guy going forward. Now, they're going to be stuck with his deal, but if Mitch Trubisky, if they keep dinking and dunking, and he can't get to 2 and 3 touchdowns a game in a division with Aaron Rodgers and Minnesota and Matt Stafford, they're going to know in Chicago we should have taken Deshaun Watson. We took the wrong guy. Remember, a lot of times in the NFL, stuff isn't announced, but it's known in-house. Like, Cam's a headache in-house. They're not going to announce it. But he's a lot of work. Trubisky, there's some questions in-house right now. I said last year about Jared Goff. If you brought Sean McVay in, and they got a left tackle and Todd Gurley, and they brought in receiver Robert Woods. If Jared Goff last year by Thanksgiving, after that disastrous first year with Jeff Fisher, if you brought in McVay, left tackle, center John Sullivan, Robert Woods, Sammy Watkins with Todd Gurley, and the best offensive young mind in football, if Jared Goff didn't hit by Thanksgiving last year, they knew, they weren't going to announce it, but the Rams were making plans to start drafting and developing the next quarterback. They're only going to give you a year and a half in this league. They're not going to announce it, but decisions will be made in the room by Sam Darnold's second year Thanksgiving. The decisions will be known about. They're never going to be all out on you your first year. Aaron Rodgers' first year in Green Bay behind Brett Favre was a mess. Mechanically, attitude, he was a mess. Nobody will judge a year one. Year two, Thanksgiving. Oh, no, they make their mind up in the rooms. They don't announce it. They make their mind up. You just don't hear it in Carolina. There's reservations about Cam. There's a lot of questions and reservations about Roller Coaster Cam.
All 3 hours of The Herd are always streaming on The Herd Channel on the iHeartRadio app.
Love to have him back. He was a three-time Pro Bowler. There was a time running downhill without Cowboy offensive line. He was at the top of the heap among NFL running backs, went to Philly, then Tennessee, and just announced his retirement. So jacked up to see DeMarco Murray, former NFL top running back, joining us in The Herd today. Went to Bishop Gorman High School, where my daughter just graduated. That is a football power. Holy mackerel, that's a football power. So you had offers to come back. Okay, you had people that said, you want to come try out? And you're like, nah, how come?
I was ready. It was a long career for me. It was something that, for me, 8 years was my goal. 8 years was my identity to finish my career. And mentally, physically, I was ready for another chapter in my life. And it was fun. I had an unbelievable career. I was very privileged and honored to play in the NFL. And talking with my family, talking it over with my agent, people that were close to me, I made the best decision to move on and walk away from the game. It was hard. It was very hard, but I was excited about it.
You know, it is interesting, and I've always supported players on this. If a company came to me and say, we just traded you to your rival, you got traded as a Cowboy to an Eagle, and it was a weird spot because Chip Kelly was the coach. And I always you signed there. But athletes, you have very short careers, and there's limited places you can go to, and sometimes you get traded. And fans, you know, most people in America, they grow up in a town and they stay in the town. They don't get traded to other companies. They don't leave for other companies. The transition was interesting. You were a Cowboy, and then you moved to Philadelphia, and it's the Chip Kelly thing, and the Chip Kelly thing didn't work. When you were there, did you sense the unraveling before it happened?
I did. It was a great offense. Great offense, a system that has worked well for him in the past at the collegiate level in his first and second year in the National Football League. So for me, looking at that, knowing Dallas Cowboys rival, they're not giving me the contract that I want.
Right.
We can't come to an agreement.
Right.
So for me, I go, I'm going to go up north. I'm going to go play for the Eagles, try to play the Cowboys twice a year and see what I can make happen. But the offensive system was different. We didn't have the personnel. I love him to death. My guy, Sam Bradford, running the read option. You know, he's a great, great guy, you know, but if he pulls the ball, that defensive end is not going to respect him if he's running the read option.
Right.
They're going to close on the running back, and we just didn't have the personnel. And Chip is a great guy, great coach, did a lot for the National Football League in his first couple years there, but I think the personnel-wise in my years in Philadelphia was not the best, you know, for that offense.
Is playing for the Cowboys different?
It is. You got a lot of eyes on you. And having played there for 4 years at a high level, playing with Jason Witten, Tony Romo, those type of guys, it's a great organization to be a part of. You got Jerry, you got Coach Gary, you got a lot of eyes on you. You got a lot of fans no matter where you go. Different arenas, you have a lot of fans. And it's a privilege to play there, but you have to be careful. You can't get trapped into off-the-field issues. Once you have one issue, it's going to escalate. Now they're talking to your teammates. Why did this guy do? You're taking away from the credibility of the team if you get into any type of trouble.
So you were a superstar at Oklahoma. You go to the Dallas Cowboys, and you were, I mean, and I'm not exaggerating, you were one of the talking points of the league for about 3 years. And then Dallas doesn't give you a contract. Now, Jerry generally has very good relationships with players. You'd put up huge numbers. How are you not bitter?
I'm not, only because the organization did so much for me. To play on that stage, to play in the National Football League, it's a privilege. And I played with unbelievable guys, Jason Witten, Tony Romo, guys who are still my friends to this day. And it's a business. You know, looking at the Le'Veon Bell situation, I understand on both sides. Now there's a huge trust factor because he's done it 2 years in a row. So I can say this is probably his last year with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right.
And it's just a business. You know, for me, I didn't have any off-the-field issues. I didn't have any
None.
Stipulations. You know, I had some injuries early on in my career, which that was their biggest thing for me. And I understood that. So we had myself, Dez Bryant, coming up for these contract extensions, and they had to make the best decision for the Dallas Cowboys. And, you know, it so happened that it didn't work out for either one of us.
You know, DeMarco Murray joining us. Here's what's interesting. And this has happened in the NFL. We used to have huddles. There's no huddles.
Right.
We used to have fullbacks. There's no fullbacks. Safeties used to be huge, crucial. Increasingly, with all the receivers, safeties are being marginalized. So I see football changes a lot. Baseball looks a lot like it used to. Now we're seeing defensive shifts. It's starting to look different. But the analytics, if I was a running back like Le'Veon Bell, running backs, Todd Gurley, are becoming valuable receiving weapons. And Le'Veon's like, hey, time out. I'm a running back, but my offensive production's also through the air. Do you sense in the National Football League running backs feel like now there's a stigma? You're a running back. But it's becoming a passing league. What do you make of these? Like, Le'Veon's one of those guys that wants to change the paradigm. I want receiving money, too. Is it a viable argument?
It could be fair on certain situations. When you look at it, it's been a passing league for a long time. But obviously, 3 years ago, I averaged 25 carries a game. That downhill cowbell type of back has only been three since 2007. Myself, Le'Veon Bell last year, and Chris Johnson. So I think you have to have a different dimension in your game. Being a receiver, a valuable receiver – in that offense, you know, it's great because you can take a 2-yard pass, you can turn it to a 6-yard because everyone's dropping out. So if you look at a Le'Veon Bell situation, Todd, those are two great versatile backs that can run, block, and catch. So they're not going to get paid the top dollar that you expect, but you look at Todd Gurley, he just got big money. He just reset the running back market, which is great, but you have to be able to receive the ball when you play running back. You have to be two-dimensional.
You're obviously a smart guy. You've taken great care of yourself, family guy. You're in Nashville now. You stayed there. You love the city, great city. And I running back is a position where you get beat up. I mean,
yes.
It's really the only position in football where you run and the people who tackle you, you can't see. It's the only position. The receiver can catch it and know there's a safety over the top.
Right.
When you run through that line, DeMarco, you have no idea where it's coming from. So running backs' careers are short. Selfishly, if I was a running back, I would want to be heavy on the receptions. Because if you throw the ball out of the backfield, I can see who – I'm not going to get my legs cut out.
You have more space when you catch the ball in a flat swing. You have more space. You can see everyone on the field as opposed to being a running back. You're running through the line of scrimmage like you mentioned. It's a lot harder. You have 11 guys. You have 300-pound-plus guys trying to tackle you, fall on you, plus your offensive guards, plus the entire offensive and defensive line. Those are big guys, you know. These guys are all falling on you. So when you have an opportunity to catch the ball,
out
in the flat, line up and slot,
small corner
like David Johnson
you.
Does a lot, yeah, and you can accelerate different matchups, and it's going to be harder for them to take you off the field in certain situations.
So what do you make of, you know, we've been talking about this today. I'm trying to get Joy to come over to my side on this. I don't really care who guys date, but I do think when you're the franchise quarterback, I'd stay out of the adult film star business. But Sean Merriman came on earlier and said, dude, it's not the first time. He just went to a restaurant where there's TMZ. What do you make if you're the coach? You know how locker rooms are. Good God, you were in Dallas where Tony Romo on a bye week went to Mexico and people ate him alive.
Yeah.
Are the media, are we being ridiculous saying, Jimmy, and not a great look?
I think it's a great conversation amongst the locker room. Training camp is here. Guys are tired. Guys are banging into each other. So around the locker room, it's going to be great to have a chuckle or two here at Jimmy G. If he's playing well, this is a guy that played well last year. He just got traded. But you can look at it from a coaching standpoint in a organization. You don't want your starting quarterback dating this guy. But us as players, we don't care. As long as he's winning, as long as he's playing dominantly like he has been, we don't care who he dates. But it's also a camaraderie builder because you can have guys in the locker room talk amongst each other, talk to Jimmy. Guys that may not really talk to him, they can come in and maybe crack a joke here and two. You know, it lets guys relax a little bit.
Now, if he struggles, I doubt he will, but if he struggled, would there be any players that said, well, yeah, you're out at night with that?
I doubt it because I'm sure this will probably be the last video that he's going to be seeing. He's going to make sure that he goes somewhere else that TMZ will not follow him with a camera phone.
By the way, when you lived in Dallas, and again, in your peak years, you were the offensive player of the year. You led the NFL in rushing. You led it in total yards. You were a Pro Bowler. You were a star for the biggest brand in football. Could you have a private life? What was it like to leave practice for DeMarco Murray?
For me, I maintained privacy. That was my biggest thing. I wasn't a big social media guy. I always tried to make sure that if I did go to dinner, did go on a family vacation, I wasn't putting it out there for the world to see or for cameras to attract me. And it's hard. It's hard to live a private life, but us as players, as athletes, you know, we kind of signed away the privacy because, you know, we play the game that we play, and it's a great game. And we do it for the fans. We do it for the championships. We do it for each other. But at the end of the day, you have to keep your privacy. You got to stay sane to some point, and that's how you can do it, by trusting different people. You can't trust everyone. There's always someone out to, hey, he's here, he's there. So you have to be careful who you're telling where you're going.
You know, I've defended Jason Garrett. I don't think he's Belichick or Sean Payton, but I think he's good. And I think Jerry can be, and I like Jerry, but Jerry's not the easiest owner to play with. He's the only owner that has press conferences after games. Give me Jason Garrett's strength as a coach and perhaps a weakness.
I think Jason Garrett's strength as a coach, he's a great motivator. He gets guys to play at a high level for him because he doesn't have any kids. The team, I played there. When he speaks in front of the team, when he's around, he's a guy's guy. He hangs out with the guys. He makes us feel like we're important, like we're family. We are family. And I think his weakness, I would have to say, just managing the game. I think he can do a little bit better at managing the game in certain situations, critical moments, you know, two-minute situations, two-minute drill, running the ball at the end of the game. So I think when I was there, we didn't play so well in the fourth quarter. Our last drives weren't as good. We didn't give ourselves a chance because timeouts were being called. Challenges weren't made.
By the way, this is what the fans in Dallas say. Yeah. What the fans are seeing, you were dealing
with.
Yes.
And you go through meetings and you have a quarterback like Tony Romo's, great guy. He's another coach on the field. Jason Witten is another great guy on the field, but Jason Garrett was able to lean on these guys because they were coaches on the field. So in certain situations, two-minute situations, Romo's got it. We work on these situations every day. We started to work on them after my first and second year, and we became great at them. And we became great at fourth quarter situations, two-minute situations where we're trying to score and get the ball back for our defense.
Yeah, so he had a flaw and he worked on it.
Yeah.
You know, I saw there was an Amazon Prime series, you know, these Hard Knock things on HBO, and Amazon Prime had something on the Cowboys. And, I mean, Dez obviously is still an NFL player. How great he is debatable. But in the Amazon Prime series, there's a moment where Dez Bryant is just imploding on a simple meeting because his receiver coach is saying, you know, this Denver secondary is about as good as we'll face. And Dez just kind of implodes. And I've theorized, DeMarco, that NFL people see that and think, hell, that meeting imploded. You can say it now. I love his passion, but Dak Prescott's numbers were better. He's 14-2 when he's targeted 8 or more receivers. I think Dez can be hard on a young quarterback because he is, you feel like you almost like, I've got to go. Did you sense with Dez, there are times that he can be a burden, overbearing in the game?
Dez is a great player. He still can play the game. You hear passion a lot. That's what, you know, that's the word around Dez Bryant. He's very passionate, and he is. I've been around him for 4 years of my career. The hardest working player I've ever seen besides Witten. And he has some maturity issues that we know. He has a checkered past that we know of. And seeing the antics on the sideline, living it firsthand, I know how hard it can be on the team. Not just the coach, not just the quarterback. So seeing it on Amazon Prime, the last years when I weren't there, I know Dak is a young guy. He's not Tony Romo. He doesn't have thick skin like Romo. Romo could calm down. Hey, I'll throw you a slant here just to calm you down. Well, Dak can't do that. Dak isn't at that level yet. He doesn't have that maturity level to say, hey, Dez, calm down. I'm coming to you in different situations. So I think it does hurt Dez. That's why he is a free agent, because coaches, GMs, they see these things, and we don't want this guy around our team.
So you saw the series too?
I saw the series.
Yeah, I mean, I'm watching it. I'm like, good God, if I'm a coach, I'm like, it'd be one thing if it was one of those really intense meetings.
Right.
It was just 8 guys in a room, and the coach is talking, and the coach is now cornered, and Dez is going after him. And, you know, sometimes these reality shows, they're not good for marriages.
They're not.
And they're not good for all players. By the way, you're a former Oklahoma star. I've been tough on Baker Mayfield. Brought him
you
here.
You have. You've been very tough. I saw the segment. I saw it. I was a little surprised. I was shocked, Colin.
Why?
One, he's an Oklahoma guy. Heisman Trophy winner.
I love.
He's great. He's,
I love Bob
Stoops. I spent time with him. We were together in game four, Cleveland and Warriors. It was a horrible game. It was a horrible game, but it was a great chance for Baker and I to spend time together. Got to meet his fiance now. He's a terrific guy. I would go back. I remember going back to Oklahoma 2 years ago when he was a junior and listening to the trainers, listening to the coaches. And I played with Sam Bradford, Heisman Trophy winner. Great guy, Oklahoma City guy who's loved. They go, this is the guy. Baker's the guy. Mentally, physically, emotionally, he gets it. The camaraderie within the locker room, the organization, the community, they love him. He's the right kind of guy. And I'm excited to see what he's going to do in Browns. Hopefully he starts day one.
People in Oklahoma don't like me.
Hopefully he starts day one. Did you hear that?
Yeah. What?
Hopefully he starts day
now
one.
Now let's slow down. Give him time to grow. You and Joy just want to rush him out to the field.
He's the number one overall pick in the draft.
Well, he was a little overdrafted. Listen, I will say this. I know people in Oklahoma just hate me. But if by me pressing him, and his great answers, I thought it helped him. I had two NFL guys that texted me that day, and they were like, that was good.
He's very mature. You see the antics on the sideline, things of that, but you know he's being competitive. You don't see that from a quarterback, but I think he may tone it down. And the NFL is a little different, so I told him there will be guys that try to press your buttons because of your history, but just stay the course, learn from Tyrod, learn from the Browns organization, and just play the game, have fun. That's it. But he'll be fine. He'll be fine.
By the way, this was, you guys have video. This is DeMarco's last game as a Cowboy. Do we have video of this?
Uh-oh.
Oh, let me see. Oh, my God. This is your last game. Let me see this real quick. Oh, good hell. That's your last game?
Don't even show me. Get this video off the screen.
Oh, God. Wasn't that awful?
It was horrible.
Do you know that would count now this year as a catch? This year they've changed the rule.
I'm still unaware of the catch. I don't know what the rule is. I mean that.
If you watch this play, it is ridiculous that it's not a catch. And I'm by the way, what if you can we slow this down? It is absolutely ridiculous.
I don't know how this wasn't. And I love Gene. I love Gene. He's my favorite ref. So happy retirement, Gene. I'm here to join you.
Ball, two feet.
He got this call so bad. I mean, this was a wrong call.
Would have changed. Yeah. Cowboys would have potentially been a Super Bowl team.
Yes.
Can you imagine? We're going to look at this video in 10 years and go, that wasn't a catch? Because the NFL went sideways for a decade on what a catch was.
That is hurtful. That is hurtful. I can't even look at that video. I can't.
DeMarco Murray, good seeing you, bud.
Likewise. I appreciate you having me on.